The SparkBall podcast may contain profanity and other adult content. Please use your discretion.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my spark file. Could be something that I want to make or how I want to be. I pump it in my spark file. I jump into my spark.
Can I ask you a question?
Me?
Mm-hmm.
Meow.
Yeah.
Have you seen...
Wait, are we on? Huh? Oh, we're starting?
It's happening.
Oh, shit. I'm sorry. Please ask me a question.
Have you seen at the 6th Avenue, 23rd Street subway stop? Have you?
No.
Oh, my God.
What's there?
I have not been there. It's been a minute since I've been down there. I don't know when the last time I was down there.
Oh, is that by Cornelia Street? No. No,
it's
that's
by
up higher.
Bed Bath & Beyond. Anyone okay. who doesn't live in New York is like,
what?
Easy.
Why are they talking about that?
There are murals of Wegman dogs, those Weimaraner
what?
Dogs. And I had no idea that they renovated that subway station. And when they did the renovation, they commissioned works by William Wegman. Is that his name? Oh my God. They were these photographs that he took of his famous dogs, those
dogs.
Beautiful dogs,
mm-hmm.
taupe dogs. And then a German company, I think, executed the murals, and they're made out of the most beautiful pieces of mm-mm. colored glass
no
and
way.
Then the occasional like little found objects here and there. And they are so beautiful. I wanted to cry.
Oh my God. This is
I
the
wanted one in
reason
my
to
heels.
Ride the subway.
Do yourself a favor.
You know need I
to,
need a
you,
couple
I think you
reasons.
Have to swipe. I think you have to get into the subway to see these. But
wow.
I felt like I was in an art museum.
Where, like, who decides that's going to happen and who pays for that? Like,
I don't
is the
know.
City like, let's beautify.
I guess it could be argued because the MTA, the subway system, is so goddamn broken that the money could have been used in a different way. But I will tell you, it lifted my spirits.
I feel like someone like has to like be a benefactor and be like, we are gonna
I don't
make
know.
This beautiful.
If you are in the New York area, do yourself a favor fave and go down to that subway station. It is beautiful. It is beautiful and moving in ways I, as a dog lover, but even if you're not, the way the eyes are depicted, those mosaics are so soulful. I said about something that I saw in a subway.
In a subway station.
Yeah, in a dirty, urine-smelling subway.
I wish I could describe for everyone. It feels and looks to me like the beauty is painful to Susan. Like it was painfully beautiful.
It
hurts.
No, I recommend it highly.
It was so pretty.
Go get into it. Oh, hey, everybody. Welcome to the Spark File. This is your one-stop lollipop for creative inspiration.
Oh, shit. I'm Laura Camion.
I'm Susan Blackwell. We are makers. We make all kinds of things.
And if you're like us and you're making stuff all the time, you know that sometimes the wellspring of ideas and inspiration can run a little dry.
So we are on the lookout for fresh ideas and images and inspiration that spark our creativity and pique our curiosity, things that inspire us to get off our asses and make things like this podcast.
Or a kick-ass poem.
Or a full-size replica of a triceratops made out of gift
yes.
wraps and duct tape.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
So yes to that. Every single episode, we're going to reach into the spark file and we're going to exchange some sparks. And then we're going to talk to some folks who spark us too.
And if you're not careful, you just might get your wick lit. So without further ado, let's open up the spark file. That's how we say it now.
Why enunciate? Why?
Who wants to go first?
Are we already ready?
Is it time?
Oh my God.
Because I know my spark's going to take some time.
Okay.
So I feel like we should.
Okay.
Are
All
you
right.
up?
I feel, I'm up.
Ready.
Yep. Susan, my spark this week.
Can I stop you for a second?
I didn't think we were quite ready.
I genuinely, genuinely get excited. I get excited, like, talk to me in a year when I'm like, I'm so fucking tired of this. But right now, like, I love putting my spark together. And I'm so excited because every time we get together and record, I'm like, I'm getting a Christmas present.
Aww.
Or a Hanukkah present. Like, I'm just like, give me the good spark. I get so excited. I can't wait.
I'm excited.
What's
too.
What's it going to be? Oh, God.
Well, mm-hmm. I don't think you could guess this in a million years.
I bet you couldn't guess mine either. Not in, if I gave you $1 million.
Dollars. No, I probably
okay, what you got for me?
My spark this week.
Oh, God.
Is.
The anticipation.
Reservoir Noir. That's right. You don't even know what it is or what to think.
I don't know what that means.
Okay. So we're going to take a long and windy road to how I got to Reservoir Noir.
All right.
Okay. I was thinking this week about this show that I watched a few years ago on the History Channel. It was called The Men Who Built America.
Oh.
Did you watch this show? Did you see that?
Girl, I don't have the History Channel.
Oh, God. You missed a good one. I love this show. It was about... Vanderbilt.
Oh, those men.
Rockefeller, Carnegie, J.P. Morgan, yeah. And Henry Ford.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So it, I assume that if more people had watched it, they would have done more episodes, but I was among
the few.
Was
it a series or one-off?
I don't know. I don't know what their intention was.
So you were super committed to it?
I watched them all.
Oh, so it was a series.
Yeah, it was a series, but I don't know if they planned to do like more than one season.
There's
a
finite number of men who built America.
Is there? Because as you watch these, you're like, oh my God, there's also this and that. You know what I mean?
Okay, all right.
So anyway, I love these shows. Okay. It was really good. And I guess I had never really thought about how... Like, of course, I'd heard of each of those guys mm-hmm. individually, but I'd never really thought about how they impacted each other. Like, Vanderbilt built the railroads, Rockefeller oil, which really started as kerosene, before it became oil. But he was kerosene.
This is interesting. And I,
this is
if
even
I ever
my
have
spark,
known this, okay? I've forgotten it.
All right. So,
Vanderbilt
think about this.
Was railroads. Rockefeller was kerosene / oil.
Oil. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Carnegie started in railroads, but ended up in steel.
Okay.
So he's a steel
Carnegie
magnet.
Steel. Mm-hmm. Okay.
J.P. Morgan, among other things, he invested everything he had to create the Edison Electricity Company. He was electricity.
Oh, wow. J.P. Morgan.
You don't usually think J.P. Morgan and electricity.
No, you don't.
And then, of course, Ford made the assembly line and automobiles.
Yeah.
So there's so many sparks just watching this series. The series is actually made in 2014. And if any of this sparked anything in anyone, I would say go back and watch it because there's a million stories within. But like, for example, have you ever heard about how Carnegie got people to trust steel? Which seems like a silly concept now because we're like, steel
is like the
hardest.
Do you mean for like building big infrastructure?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And did he build some crazy shit and then
basically
push babies out?
He was a PR man at heart. And of course, that speaks to me. He didn't push any babies. I don't know what you were saying. He didn't push any babies out of carts.
He created some like dangerous steel-related situation and then was like, look how safe. There's babies out there. That's how he talked.
No, he did not do that.
Didn't do
that. He
allegedly.
So that I know of, he did not do that. But he built... the first bridge across the Mississippi River
for
a railroad. And so, as
you
know,
where it was?
Sorry.
Damn it.
I know
the limits to our knowledge. Sorry. I knew when I asked you, I saw your face and I was like, I didn't Google. There's so many directions these sparks can go. Sorry.
I know. And
I just wondered if I had driven across it or lived near it.
It's very possible.
Yeah.
But it was for the train. Obviously, it was a train mm-hmm. track.
I drove across it in my train.
I mean, at the time, it
you
was for a train.
Me.
It's, but anyway, it was an enormous bridge. He didn't actually know how to make it. No one knew if it was going to be possible, but obviously, he believed he could. And so he did. And yet, people didn't trust it. It was nerve-wracking. Everyone was like, that's nice, but I'm sure as shit not going across that thing.
Did they have bridges? They had bridges before that. Were they built of like high quality wood?
I guess. And not quite that high, not quite that long.
Got it. Okay.
So it was a very popular belief at the time that an elephant would not walk on a surface that was unstable. You know, because we always go around thinking about elephant. What do the elephants say?
I knew he took something vulnerable and he pushed it across that thing.
No, he created a parade.
Oh,
and the parade was to be led by an elephant. and invited the media. It was a pretty big risk because if that elephant, for any reason, unstable or otherwise, had decided, I'm not walking across this fucking thing.
Sure.
End of bridge. But the elephant walked across, as did all the people, and it was a big to-do.
Wow.
And it was like, okay, done. Steel. Steel it is then.
Steel is the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Skyscrapers, bridges, et cetera. He actually could not produce enough steel for the demand.
Wow.
Yeah. So he was trying to crank it out. But that was just a little side thing. And of course, I love a good PR story. So I got to give props to that. But that's not what my spark is about today. So back to this. So you know, I was talking about how they really pushed each other, and this whole series lets you, like, gives you insight into, like, how the competition between one and the other built, you know, like, arch nemesis
that, yes,
like, drove the, yeah, next one, and, yeah, so on and so forth. So Rockefeller was driven by his competition with Vanderbilt. And then, so Rockefeller ended up, like, he made his original mark using the railways to deliver his kerosene, okay, everywhere. The railroads got greedy. They couldn't come to a deal with him. And he was like, fuck it. I will build pipelines where I can deliver my oil wherever I want.
Shit. I don't need
skip
your
the railroad.
Stinking railroads.
Right?
Yeah.
So he did that and ended up putting several railroads out of business, not Vanderbilt, but some of the smaller ones,
wow,
like Tom Scott. Tom Scott was Carnegie's mentor. Oh. Carnegie and Tom Scott basically was driven out of business by Rockefeller and then shortly thereafter got ill and died. Carnegie never forgot that. Never forgot it.
It
was like, oof, that motherfucker, I'm going to get as wealthy and as powerful as Rockefeller.
Wow.
So,
powerful motivation.
Powerful motivations, right? So he's out there producing
steel. I bet
steel.
These guys were all dicks, and I bet they were like so, like, just like to be around.
Yeah, ugh, a little bit, but all different in a way, and driven by
different kinds of dicks.
Different kinds of dicks. Really amazing how many different kinds of dicks there are.
From time to time, you know, we hobnob a little bit, and from time to time, we'll meet somebody who is really successful, really ambitious, very high flying, and accomplished, who is awesome.
Yeah,
that is a refreshing change, yeah, of pace.
Yeah.
But I bet these guys were real fun at a party.
Real fun. Yeah. And like, yes, real fun in different ways. Rockefeller was incredibly religious and had a sense of righteousness about his,
you know, I love,
like,
that.
He, you know, he was like destined, I guess, to this greatness. He wasn't born into it and he built it. And a little bit of like, fuck you. If he outsmarted you, it was because, you know, God was on his side.
Wow.
In a way. Interesting that you say that you think that they might have all been dicks, because Carnegie was actually known to be a bit of a nicer guy.
Oh, interesting. I'm sorry. That was a gross,
you know what,
generalization.
Look what you've done.
I
you've offended him. And say you're sorry to all the Carnegies.
What's his name? Dale?
No. Andrew.
Dale Carnegie's the how to make friends and influence people. I don't know.
Andrew,
sorry, and bones of Andrew Carnegie.
Yes.
My apologies.
We're very sorry, but
I judged you too soon.
But you weren't exactly entirely wrong, because he knew he was too nice to do some of the things that needed to get done. Mm-hmm. So he hired like a major asshole to run his companies, and basically he cut wages. He made them work like 12-hour shifts. He just pushed and pushed and pushed so that they could create all the steel that needed to be made. Like
to meet
I said,
the demands.
He couldn't, to meet the demands. So that guy, his name is Frick. I forget his first name. Henry Frick, I think. And so so Carnegie hired him to do all of the dirty work, and he did it, and they were more successful than ever. And this is all leading towards my spark. I promise it's getting there.
Wow. I thought we were in the spark.
We're still flittering around.
Preambling.
Yes, we're preambling.
This is pre-spark.
So Frick was riding high as the chairman of Carnegie's company. They're raking in the dough. They're in Pennsylvania. They create, actually Frick creates this very elite South Fork hunting and fishing company, and it's for the 1%.
South Fork.
It's called South Fork.
Like Dallas?
I guess so.
Awesome.
And they build this on this man-made lake that is created by a dam, the South Fork Dam. And 14 miles down the road a piece is a little town called Johnstown. Now, Frick and Carnegie and all the guys at the club have been told, like, this dam is pretty shoddy.
Oh, no.
And needs some help and needs to be supported a bit. And not only did they not take heed to that advice, Frick was like, fuck this. Like, the road is barely wide enough for all of our club members to get to the club. So we need to widen this road. And to do that, we need to decrease the height of the dam. So go ahead and do that. And they do. And it's weakened even more.
Oh,
and
my God.
People, city officials are like, this is really bad. This is bad news. And no one listens, essentially. So Memorial Day weekend, 1889, the club goers are up there enjoying their weekend. And it starts to storm. It starts to rain. Torrential rain. It's actually like the dam is increasing like an inch every 10 minutes.
The water is rising.
The water is rising. Meanwhile, down in Johnstown, the steel workers and their families are going about their business.
Oh, God. I'm gearing up to get so mad right now.
I know you are. I know.
Fuck. Keep talking.
There are some people, some of the workers at the club that are like, we got to try to sandbag, help this dam, and some try to support the dam because we're kind of screwed here. Nothing that they do helps. One of them gets word by telegraph down to the town is like, you guys need to prepare for the worst. This looks pretty bad. At the telegraph center, they're like, we've heard that before. Everybody knows that dam is.
So they make an executive decision.
They make an executive decision. Not to do jack. Shit. Fuck. Thank you for that sound effect. That's right.
Absolutely
nothing is done.
Shit.
So sure enough, this is like not the funny part. The dam breaks. There's 20 million ton of water being held back by that dam.
Oh my God.
It breaks. 2,200 people die.
Oh my God.
That's right. It's the biggest disaster in our country, like killing the most number of people in a single day up until 9/11.
Oh.
That remained the single biggest disaster.
Wait, what state is this in?
No, this is Pennsylvania.
Shit.
So bodies, for years, bodies continue to be found like 300 miles away.
Oh my God.
1,600 homes are wiped out.
Totally could have been stopped. Totally due to human negligence.
Could have been stopped. That's right. That's right. And a little side spark. People from all around the country came to help. And it was the first peacetime effort of like the Red Cross. That was the very beginnings of the Red
Look
Cross,
for the helpers,
which is interesting.
Fred Rogers. Yeah. Look for the helpers.
So this event, obviously people blamed the club, people, you know, but, and there were lawsuits, but they never actually got, you know, held accountable for anything, which was real drag.
Yeah, that is enraging.
But Carnegie is said to have been a changed man by this event.
Yeah, killing and 2,200 people will do that to you.
Yeah. And so he goes about, like, he dedicates money to save this town or rebuild this town. He dedicates money to libraries all around the country and, of course, to building the greatest music hall the world has ever known here in New York City. He essentially decides, you know, one, going back to him being a PR guy, he knows his own personal brand needs some rehabilitating.
His legacy, yeah.
Yeah. And he decides he wants to be known for the good work that he does.
Well, we've all heard of Carnegie Hall and we've heard of Carnegie Mellon, and I've never heard of whatever this disaster was called, the Johnstown
flood, which is...
I have never heard of this in my life.
I couldn't believe it. When I was watching the show, I was like, how the hell? This was one of many things. I was like, how the hell have I never heard of this?
And especially after, if that statistic that you just said about September 11th being the next...
It's true.
There were other disasters out of my mind during that time, but I don't remember ever hearing this before.
There were other disasters that took place over multiple days, but this is like a single day event.
Yes.
You know, wow. So interesting. And as this relates to my spark today, it got me thinking.
Wait, is this your spark?
I'm getting there.
Oh, geez.
I told you it was a long and winding road.
I love it.
All that is just a preamble to the spark. Okay.
Great.
So
I'm here for it.
I know you are. And so as this relates to my spark today, it got me thinking about towns that drown. Drown towns. It's a thing. Towns that drown.
I'm agog.
Go with me here.
I'm with you.
So Johnstown, obviously, it was unplanned and it was tragic.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to make light of that. But there are times when towns are very deliberately drowned on purpose for like flood prevention.
Flood prevention of other towns?
Yeah.
Like you're going to take one for the team.
That's right.
To divert water.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And every year, Wes and I go to a lake called Dale Hollow Lake. It's in Tennessee. And we go there for his family reunion. And it's so much fun. And
You just told everybody where you go once a year.
It's a pretty big place. I don't think anyone's going to find me there. But if you can find me, kudos to you. We're out on the lake. We're water skiing. We're ski doing. We're like pontoon boating. We're speed boating.
Are you about to tell me there's a town
boating
under that lake?
Susan, there's a little town under that lake.
This makes me want to cry.
That town is called Willow Grove.
Oh, God, it's got a poetic name.
It sounds really sweet, right? So last year is when I discovered, we'd been going there for years.
I was out on the ski-doo.
I was like,
my foot brushed something.
A church steeple. Really, really crazy. Like last year is the first year I found out about that. I was like, are you kidding me? And I just started to think about like what's under the surface. So just imagining like on the surface. Yes, what lies beneath. And I'm not a horror writer. I can't. Like I just can't go there.
She said horror, not whore.
I'm not a whore. I am a horror writer, but I'm not a horror writer. And I just can't. Like scary shit is not my thing. I can't live in that. But someone might, and I say this for you.
This is such a good spark.
Okay, the spark. So here's what I discovered. In 1943, this little town called Willow Grove was told by the government, hey,
you best be getting along.
We need that land you're on.
Oh my God.
So we can fill it with water. And the town apparently didn't want it. Like, obviously, they fought back, but there was no way. But if you think about it, 1942, so their sons and husbands are going off to war.
Oh, my God.
And literally going off to war knowing, like, so when you get back, this isn't going to be here. Your home's not going to be here.
The wives and the daughters and the elders had to pack up all
be
that.
Be relocated.
Fuck.
Where? Nobody knows. I mean, I'm sure some people know, but I don't know. When I say nobody knows, I mean I don't know.
Yeah.
They went to high ground.
Internet knows.
So they moved. But the government, like, you know, they started buying the land
for like pennies on the dollar.
I'm sure.
This isn't good.
So they buy the land. They start like tearing down buildings. They don't want anything that can actually rise to the surface. You know, they want to clean
like
it out.
All baby dolls and
burn
other...
the farmland. All of it. All of it.
Pet cemeteries. So graveyards? Do they move the bodies?
So, Susan, why you all like you have an uncanny knack?
They didn't move the bodies, did they?
No, they do. They do. But here's the thing.
Oh God!
Here's the thing.
I'm scared.
All right, so they move the graveyards, and you know exhume all the bodies.
Is it a poltergeist? You only move the headstones.
What? No, but in Dale Hollow, there's a legend of Eddie Irons. Let me tell you a little bit about Eddie Irons.
This is so ghost story. Okay, go ahead.
So Eddie Irons was 18 years old in 1799.
I'm bad at math, but okay.
That's a long time ago.
Sure.
So he, on his 18th birthday, he was given a horse. And legend has it, this horse was as feisty and stubborn as Eddie himself. So Eddie decides, I'm going to ride this horse. And he gets on it, and the horse takes off into the Walnut Grove.
The Willow Grove?
No, the Walnut Grove. A grove of walnut trees.
Okay.
Yeah. And he hits his head on a walnut, like a low-hanging branch, and dies instantly.
Okay.
Eddie's dad first kills the horse, as one does. Then he cuts down the walnut tree, and he builds a walnut casket for his son, and he buries his son.
Okay.
Okay. Eddie, 100 years goes by, and Eddie's happily buried in the ground, but little walnut, sorry, now you've got me saying Walnut Grove, but I mean Willow Grove now.
I didn't do it.
The Walnut Grove was where he,
Willow Grove, which is under the lake, yes.
That's right. So Willow Grove now needs a school. And they go to build a school, and they break ground, and they run into what? A walnut casket.
Oh.
It's Eddie. So they move Eddie.
Pissed.
And he is pissed. They move him to another location.
Uh-huh.
30 years go by. The town needs a post office. They break ground.
Oh, no.
And they run into what?
Quit moving Eddie.
Oh, walnut
Quit
casket.
Quit moving Eddie.
Yes.
This isn't going to turn out well for anybody.
They move him one more time. And then they, 10 years after that, they're like, we need a bigger school. Here's where we want it. And they break ground and they run into a walnut casket. At this point, there's enough people alive during all of these, you mm-hmm. know, and they're like, we need to give Eddie
this
a
real... This is a one-man poltergeist situation.
Right.
I can feel it. Yeah.
We need to give him a real resting place. And so they decide to bury him in the cement steps of the new schoolhouse. So that he will be able to be there forever,
okay.
safe and sound.
Uh-huh.
All is well in his new burial home until the Army Corps of Engineers come around and they need to tear down this school building along with everything else in order to flood the town. So they are fearlessly are like, not a problem. We can get Eddie out of here and move him once again. But Eddie had other plans. The Army chipped away at that cement. They tried to blast through that cement. Nothing was moving Eddie from his new burial site. And there he stays under the water of Dale Hollow Lake. They couldn't get him out.
The day that you're skidooing at the family reunion. And you're like, something brushed my foot.
That's right. That's right.
The corpse hand.
Mm-hmm. So I give you that little spark.
Fuck.
The name of my spark comes from this fun fact. As I was doing my research, it turns out that there is a name for crime novels that have something to do with towns that drown.
What?
And the name of that niche little genre.
Niche.
Is Reservoir Noir. Okay, so there's not a ton of them out there. There's like a short list of Reservoir Noir, but I am telling you that is ripe for someone to write a horror story. Get one of those books, adapt one of those books, do something. Because I can't think of a horror film. I mean, maybe people might write in and tell us if I'm wrong.
Yeah,
but
yeah. Because we don't watch all the horror movies.
Yeah,
but we watch all the horror movies, but not the horror movies.
You just see, like, on the surface, families barbecuing and water skiing, and down below, the schoolhouse and Eddie Irons.
Fuck.
I don't know.
It's
just
creepy.
Think there's some
Reservoir
fun stuff there.
Noir, which just confirms my theory that for every spark, but also like for every fetish. I swear to God.
My God.
There is like a quarterly
Holy
magazine that you
shit.
Can subscribe to. My
yes.
friend Gary used to say that there must be a magazine called Taint Griddler. And it's just for people that like to have their taints griddled.
Ew.
It's a specific fetish, but you know somebody's just like, oh God, I've dreamed all my life of having somebody
like if I make this
tape.
Website, people will come, right? They'll show up and say, I want that. I love that.
Reservoir Noir.
Yeah. And so I had a couple of sources. I looked around on the internet. Now, these blogs have not been updated in many years. But
Live Journal,
ghostlakes.com and Local Lore and Gore, which I love the name. I really hope you keep writing Local Lore and Gore.
That.com was a weird, good bait and switch.
Okay.
Spark.
Okay. You thought we were going with the Men Who Built America.
No, baby. We're going to Reservoir Noir.
That's right.
The
There's
irons.
A lot of sparks within sparks there. Enjoy that.
Now,
Do
enjoy
something.
This
Go
message from
something.
Our sponsor. We don't really have sponsors yet.
Ghostlakes.com.
Ghostlakes.com. Our sponsor, Ghostlakes.com. A website that hasn't been updated since 2010. Oh, Camion.
Blackwell.
Camion. My little baby Camion. You know, have I sung that before on here? Your theme
I don't think
song?
So. That's my secret theme song.
Before I start this spark, I'm going to say a bunch of things. I'm going to say this and I'm going to say it again.
Okay.
This spark is intense. This spark, as always, I will be using adult language, as is my wont. But I'm also going to be talking about some graphic sexual content and sexual abuse. And if that's not your jam, you can choose whether you want to listen to this or not. Camion, you don't get a choice.
I'm making a face because I wonder if we should have told them that before you mentioned the
Can we
taint grizzling
the,
oh, or taint, whatever that was.
Taint grizzle is a different quarterly subscription.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Magazine.
Sorry no, we didn't warn
but,
you before
But in
that.
All seriousness, I'm going to talk about some things that are intense and
yes.
I'm going to talk about sexual abuse. So if that's not
okay.
for you, please do what you need to do.
Seriously, thank
to protect
you
yourself.
For the warning.
I'm titling this spark. No rain, no flowers.
Oh.
No spider bite, no spider powers.
Oh.
And that, of course, is a quote from our friend Brad Montague, who we love.
Thank you, Brad.
No rain, no flowers, no spider bite,
no
spider
powers.
That's right. So this spark came to me listening to a phenomenal podcast called Believed, and it was created by two Michigan radio reporters who worked in conjunction with NPR. Their names are Lindsay Smith and Kate Wells, and like the women they are covering in the story, they are fucking badass. They are sparkish as fucked. Believed is a fantastic podcast, and I highly, highly recommend it. This spark was really crystallized and fleshed out for me by my friend Michael Barres, who's passionate and knowledgeable about the culture that birthed this spark and all the players in the story. He provided me with many resources, and I'll share some of those in a moment.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Michael. When I teach, I use a definition of creativity that I learned from Sir Ken Robinson.
Oh, I love Sir
He's
Ken
a spark.
Robinson.
We're going to save him for a different day.
Fun fact, I've met him and totally crushed on him. I was a little bit embarrassed by my
so
crush.
So smart. That's
He's
a great crush.
So smart. He's so funny. He's also like 80.
And a genius.
And a genius. And I was just like, oh, I'm feeling feelings.
I love you.
I love you.
Aww.
Okay. So that was just.
So Sir Robinson, I just burped, defines creativity as applied imagination. And I add that fights for the powers of good. Applied imagination that fights for the powers of good. Because you can be a real life monster like a serial killer or a serial abuser and be profoundly creative, but
That's
I'm not
right.
interested in energizing that. So for me, creativity equals applied imagination that fights for the powers of good.
I like.
Today's spark is what I'm calling a dark spark.
Oof.
We can find inspiration and source material anywhere, of course. And sometimes life is awesome and sometimes life is nawsome, but the nawsome parts can provide powerful creative inspiration and source material and fuel if you choose to mine it and process it as such. So what I'm going to share with you is at first deeply awesome, but what is profoundly sparkish and inspiring and awesome to me is what people are creating out of this dark spark. Again, I warn you, I'm going to be talking about sexual assault and other tough subjects, so you get to choose whether you want to continue listening or not. Okay, here we go. Do you know the name Larry Nassar?
Oh,
do you know
I've
that name?
Heard he's a serial killer. No,
he's not, but he's a coach. Done a lot of damage.
He's a college coach.
Larry Nassar is the former USA Gymnastics and Michigan State University doctor.
Yes.
Yeah. Who sexually abused patients for more than 20 years.
Mm-mm.
And at his trial in 2018, hundreds of women testified at his sentencing. And that's just the women who came forward.
Mm-mm.
This, I'm going to say it, piece of shit, escaped justice for decades and maintained this appearance of being this good guy and this ally and this protector. And most of the time, the ways that he perpetrated this abuse was under the guise of medical treatment.
Ugh.
I'm going to speak graphically for a moment. P.S. Also, this is not for children. This is not content for children.
Shut off now.
Larry would treat patients who had injuries like a heel fracture or a shoulder sprain with what he was calling pelvic manipulations. And he wasn't even certified to treat the pelvic floor, but your average patient may not know any of this. So he would have a girl as young as 6 years old or a teen, or sometimes even an adult woman in his treatment room. And without warning or explanation and without getting consent and without wearing gloves, he would insert his fingers in her vagina. According to experts in legit pelvic floor treatment, you would never do that to a person who, you would wear gloves, you would get consent, you would explain it, and you would only do that with a person who was already sexually active, right? You wouldn't do it with
a
kid or a teenager. Or he would massage a patient's bare breast for extended periods of times. This fucker did this to so many people. And you might ask yourself, where were the parents? But many times, a girl's mother would be in the treatment room.
No, no.
Yes. And he would position his body. This is making me so mad and so hot. I'm having such a visceral reaction to this. He would position his body so that the parent couldn't see that he was abusing the girl right there. Just right their feet from the parent.
Oh, that angers me.
And so I know.
I'm sorry.
This is a dark spark, but I promise you.
It gets better.
Sometimes parents and victims did report him. So how did he get away with it? So gymnastics culture is apparently, I took gymnastics for 2 weeks when I was in the seventh grade.
And so it was, the culture.
I know it. No, yeah. I don't. I was always something that I wanted to do. And I was I'm terrible at this. And but it's very rigorous. It's very tough. And not all, but some coaches are just historically have been brutal.
Mm-hmm.
So one of Larry Nassar's best buddies was this guy named John Gettert. And Wikipedia told me he's an American gymnastics coach who coached on the Olympic level. And it says on Wikipedia, many former gymnasts have described Gettert's coaching style as intense, strict, and abusive. Several former gymnasts have recounted that Gettert repeatedly told them to kill themselves. He was known to throw shit in his gym when he was angered. And on at least one account, Gettert shoved a gymnast forcibly enough for her to sustain a black eye, ruptured lymph nodes in her neck, and a torn muscle in her stomach. In 2013, Gettert was under criminal investigation for his abusive treatment of gymnasts, and the county prosecutor's office stated there was enough evidence to charge him, but instead allowed him to seek counseling.
What?
Yeah.
How did that guy get away with it? Are they similar in the way that they...
Well, keep on listening.
Okay.
So in December of 2013, a former employee of Gettert's contacted USA Gymnastics to inform them of Gettert's abusive treatments of his athletes. And USA Gymnastics stated they addressed the letter writer's concerns with Gettert, though the specific actions by USA Gymnastics were never made public.
Ugh.
So that's an extreme example of the culture, but it is a real example. And another is, Bella Caroli.
Yes,
you know him.
Yeah.
He and his wife ran a training ranch in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And that the environment there also very extreme, very athletes were basically separated from their parents and also treated. They were watched when they ate. They were fed things that weren't nutritious enough.
Wasn't he eventually accused of sexual misconduct as well?
These bitches are going down. I don't know about sexual misconduct, but abusive treatment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So John Gettert and Larry Nassar had this close personal and professional relationship. Mm. And many former gymnasts and parents have asserted that the intense and abusive environment that Gettert created in his gym allowed for Nassar, who is this like quiet and seemingly like gentle, good guy who regularly volunteered at Gettert's gym, it allowed him to easily groom gymnasts and gain their trust. Mm. And several gymnasts have admitted that Gettert created such a hostile environment that they were unable to approach Gettert about the abuse. And at least one former gymnast testified that Gettert walked in on a supposed medical treatment while Nassar was abusing her and that Gettert made a joke about her injury and left the room.
Oh, God.
So that's an extreme example of the environment that some of these girls and women were working in and the environment that Larry Nassar was a party mm-hmm. to. So on top of all that culture, which you have to, I feel like you have to understand that. And that, again, I'm saying this is extreme and I'm not saying all gyms are run this way and I'm not saying that all coaches are like this.
Right.
But some were. Mm-hmm. So on top of that cultural context, throughout the 20 years that Larry Nassar was serial abusing and abusing and abusing and abusing these girls and women, there were some who stepped up and reported him. They told their parents, they told school officials, they told police. And this Larry fucking Nassar kept talking his way out of it, claiming it was medical treatment, claiming that his patients didn't understand because they didn't understand their young bodies. And he would provide authorities with these PowerPoints and videos, complex that detailed the kind of medical treatments and what he was calling pelvic floor treatments that he was doing on his patients in order to make it seem legitimate. So time and time again, he talked his way out of it.
Is there any, like if anyone saw those PowerPoints now, like is there any legitimacy to...
No, in the podcast Believe, which is such a good fucking podcast, they go to expert doctors in pelvic floor treatment, and it's worth a listen, but they're sort of like, some of the things that he's talking about are legitimate, but not digitally penetrating a young woman who... hasn't been explained. There's no gloves on. There's no consent given. And a person who is not old enough to be sexually active. Like, so it was, he could just like talk it, like be his own expert witness basically. And authorities believed him and let him off the hook. Another thing that he would do when the authorities came a calling, he'd lean on his cronies, some of them female, to vouch for this work. And so institutions like Michigan State University and USA Gymnastics seemed to cover their asses instead of prioritizing the well-being of these young women. If you want to make me mad, this is a way to make me mad. Be like an institution or an organized religion or like a company that has a lot of money and like do something like poison the drinking water or like have like a culture rife with abuse and then do everything you can to just cover your ass and like bury it in filing cabinets. Nothing makes me angrier that nobody stood up. Mm-hmm. Nobody stood up. And I'm talking about the people in these organizations. I'm not talking about like the parents and the victims of this and the survivors of this.
They not only didn't stand up, but then like someone went back to these girls to explain, no, what you've experienced actually is legit and we're not going to do anything about
it. And sent them back into treatment. I'm making a quotey gestures. Treatment. So oh God, all these people have to go fuck themselves so hard. So you may be asking yourself, how did this guy finally get taken down?
Yes.
This is where we pivot.
Okay.
It was the great work of, there's so many people contributed to the takedown.
But this is, to be clear, 20 years in the making.
Yes.
Okay.
Yield. Okay. There is a Michigan State University police detective named Andrea Mumford who started asking questions that nobody had asked before.
Do you know when? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, like it's not that far. It's not that long ago. I'm going to say 2016, like 2017,
what kind of 2018. What insight did she?
She asked a question nobody had asked before. Like when you're examining a patient, when you're providing medical treatment to a patient, do you ever get aroused? And all of a sudden he was like, and it's like, you hear the recordings, and in the podcast, you hear the recordings of his brain starting to fracture because somebody is getting too close to the hot spot. So Andrea Mumford, shout out. Writers from the Indy Star, a newspaper in Indianapolis, who busted this shit open with some investigative journalism. An amazing woman / lawyer / survivor of Nassar's abuse named Rachel Den Hollander. Holy, this woman is a warrior. This woman is a warrior. And when nobody else was standing up and naming, there were people that had come forward, but they were not using, they were protected. They weren't using, they were using anonymous names. Just, and P.S., bless you.
Yes.
Bless you.
Of course.
Rachel Den Hollander, for a long time, was the only person who stood in public and said, this happened to me, and used her name.
Oh my God.
And she really, I think, made it safe for other people to start coming forward.
Mm-hmm.
These people, finally, they worked together and independently, and together they brought this shit to light and finally got him prosecuted.
Holy crap.
This is from the podcast Believed. Did I mention what a fucking good podcast this is? Their journalism is excellent. There's this one woman in the lawsuit. Her name is Kyle Stevens. Her family had been friends with the Nassars, and they all got together from the time that Kyle was a little girl. They all got together once a week to make dinner together ever since she was like 5 or 6. As a child, Kyle had told her parents that Nassar was abusing her. But she was not believed. And he would be like, you're cooking dinner. I'll go in the basement and play with the kids. And he'd get them like playing hide and go seek. So they'd all be separated.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would abuse her. Right. So she totally told her parents. They totally didn't believe her. And
oh my God.
Yeah. And they kind of made her life a living hell a little bit. And like,
because
you're lying.
My God.
Yeah. Tell the truth. When are you going to tell the truth? And it became a real pain point between her and especially her father, and really fractured the family apart. So instead of reporting it, they took her to a child psychologist who also sounded like a total creeper. And even though he was a mandatory reporter of such abuse allegations, he didn't seem to ever have reported it.
No
yes,
way.
Girl. Yes. Again, stand up. Stand up, people. Uh-huh. Stand up. Eventually, Kyle was so worn down by her family telling her to stop lying that she was like, fine, I lied. He didn't do it.
God.
And then she was forced as a young person to reconcile, again, quotes, reconcile with Nassar in her own living room. And during that family meeting, Nassar said, no one should ever do that. And if they do, you should tell someone. God, this is a dark
son
spark.
Of a bitch. Oh,
so
God.
As you can imagine, not only does this abuse do all the things that abuse does to a person, but it, like I said, it just blows her fucking family apart. This fucking piece of shit, Nassar. And I understand that. I know enough about like human psychology. I'm not a doctor. I just play one on TV. Something happened to him. I get that. But God damn it. Something happens to a lot of people, and they don't just spend decades destroying other people's lives. Mm. So in the fall of 2016, Kyle is in her 20s. Kyle, who family didn't believe her.
Okay.
She's living in Chicago. She sees the Rachel Den Hollander story in the reporting.
Wow.
She sees that someone else is publicly accusing Nassar of the abuse. And she knows that while no one believed her as a kid, this is her second chance. And she calls the police. Get it, Kyle.
Her.
Get it, Rachel. And again, this is from this fucking great podcast that I mentioned, Believed. It's so great. They say, Kyle's police report is critical because what police realize when they hear Kyle's story is that her abuse doesn't have anything to do with so-called medical techniques. What he did to her, it is so clearly just straightforward child abuse. And that means the police can use Kyle's story to get a search warrant for Larry's house because that's where the abuse took place. Then the police, they get the warrant for Larry's arrest. And 3 days before Thanksgiving in 2016, Nasser is out running errands and a team of undercover police officers move in. Oh. And for the first time ever, Larry Nasser is arrested.
Wow.
Get it.
Wow. Get it. That's awesome.
I see, I'm going to cry. I see so much bravery and risk taking and creativity and tenacity and strength in the work that these people did, in the work that those journalists at the Indy Star did in bringing that story, in the way that Rachel Den Hollander, oh my God, her complete, intelligent, and thorough approach. You've got to listen to this podcast.
I will.
To the way that she came forward and led the charge with other survivors, and the way Kyle Stevens worked with the Michigan police to get Nasser arrested finally, and the way Detective Andrea Mumford conducted her interviews, asking questions that nobody thought to ask before, and the way lead prosecutor Angela Povilaitis, I hope I'm saying your name right, Angela, made the case in court. It was so strategic and intelligent and badass, and that bravery was so contagious, so that other survivors of Nasser's abuse could stand up and be heard. And it's so goddamn inspiring, and it's so it's so sparkish. And then the way Judge Rose Marie Aquilina conducted the trial, admittedly it was controversial. Some people felt that she was not entirely impartial towards Larry Nasser. But it sure as fuck was sparkish. I mean, even if you're, whether you're thinking about how you live your life or the art you want to make or a character you want to write in a novel, this judge is sparkish as fuck. At this point, Nasser had already been sentenced to, I believe it was, I've seen in different places, it's either 50 or 60 years in prison, I believe, for the possession of child pornography that they found when they raided his house.
Not this guy.
This guy. So before sentencing in the case, so he's already, you know, sentenced to what's probably going to keep him in prison for the rest of his life. Before the sentencing in this case of his sexual abuse of these victims, 20 years of victims, Judge Rose Marie Aquilina gave every one of Nasser's survivors who wanted to speak a chance to stand in that courtroom and provide him with a victim. I don't think it's a victim impact statement. I think it's just an impact statement because y'all are survivors.
That's right.
We are survivors. And mother of God, the self-expression that poured out of these women. It was some of the greatest writing. Rachel Den Hollander delivered a 30 plus minute statement that was as powerful as any sermon I have ever heard. And her "I Have a Dream" refrain that she repeated over and over was, "How much is a little girl worth?"
Oh.
How much is a little girl worth?
Oh, God.
Kyle Stevens, who I just told you about, who had been abused by Nasser in a non-medical context, said this. Oh, fuck me. I'm going to cry. "After my parents confronted you, they brought you back to my house to speak with me. Sitting on my living room couch, I listened to you tell me no one should ever do that. And if they do, you should tell someone. Well, Larry, I'm here not to tell someone, but to tell everyone."
Ooh.
Ooh. Get it. Get it, Kyle. Ultimately, 204 people got to stand in that courtroom and tell.
204.
Yeah.
204. Yeah. People.
There's a soundbite from the woman whose job, her job was to organize the people who wanted to make an impact statement. And as people started to make statements and it was being broadcast on the news, so you have to remember, oh, I got to take a breath. You have to remember there were people, oh my God, there were people sitting at home.
Yeah.
Who had been abused by him watching this, and they were watching this in real time, and they were not party to the lawsuit. Maybe, and they were like, me too. And they were, people were just like surfacing and signing up. And there were, there was a situation, I know I didn't watch all of them, but I know there was at least one that I'm aware of where the mother spoke because the young person who had been abused never came back from it and ended up taking her own life.
Oh, no.
But it was just like the self-expression of people standing there so bravely.
In their power.
In their power, looking him in the eye and saying what they had to say.
I will not be ashamed.
I will not be broken by you.
That's right.
Yes. It was
Wow.
204 people stood in that courtroom and told their stories. And then Judge Rosemarie Aquilina sentenced Larry Nassar to 40 to 175 years in prison. And before she adjourns, she says, "I just signed your death warrant."
Yes.
It may be controversial. Holy crap. But as a survivor, I was like, that is satisfying. Mm-hmm. That is satisfying, Judge Aquilina. So,
wow.
I find spark in that. I find inspiration in that.
Hell yes.
But there's more. These athletes are trained to be so strong physically and mentally. They have discipline. They have grit. They have this high tolerance for pain. They have strength and poise under enormous pressure. And now this army of girls and women is realizing that they can take all of these powers that they have been trained into them and their anger and their anguish, and they can do something with it.
That's right.
Michael Barres compared it to a superhero origin story. Bruce Wayne saw his parents murdered. Kal-El was orphaned on his exploded world. Logan was tortured and rose up and became Wolverine. What we're seeing with these women is that same principle, but in real life. The powerless and victimized experience this event where their latent superpowers emerge, and these girls and women are legit superheroes. They're super strong, they're crazy skilled, they're disciplined, they're exceptional beings, and suddenly they're understanding they can use all these skills that they have and fight hard for the powers of good. And many of these women, some of them Olympic athletes, are using these superpowers to change the culture. There was this great article in Vanity Fair. When asked if she would compete in the 2020 Games, Olympian Ali Raisman waved away the question. The win she wanted now was not Olympic gold, but an eradication of sexual abuse and also of the sport's psychologically and physically abusive aspects. She said, "Right now, the most important thing is doing as much as I can to make change." Because you have to remember, this is so complex. These women and girls, these athletes, they have love for the sport they've committed their lives and great expense and so much sacrifice to the sport. And I love that, like, not only can like one fucker or five fuckers not take that love away, but also they're sort of like, we're going to keep what we love. We banish you and we're going to make this experience what we want it to be and make it healthier for ourselves and for future athletes. At UCLA, under a coach named Valerie Condis Field, there's discipline, there's rigor, but there's also creativity, there's self-expression and support. She's this amazing coach. They call her Miss Val, and she comes not from a gymnastics background, but from a dance background. She's a choreographer. So there are floor routines being created, not just to score maximum points by executing the required gymnastic feats and those cookie cutter sort of like tumbling passes and to score big points, but these are floor routines that are being choreographed and customized to express some essence of the individual gymnast. So if you're a gymnast and you're like, I want to be like a supermodel space alien walking the runway, that's the flavor of your Florex routine. Or if you're like, I'm Amelie, I'm a French waitress in this one. That's your, you know, like something that they're truly expressing. Awesome. They're not just these like superpowered robot people. They're truly, there are some places where the culture is changing and they're truly expressing themselves.
That's exciting.
If you're interested, I would love for you all listeners to, maybe you've already seen it, it totally went viral. There is a Florex routine by a gymnast named Caitlin Ohashi that went viral. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think so.
It's set to, it's like, it's a bunch of songs chopped together, but it is joyous.
Yeah.
It is so joyous. Yeah.
Are they Motown songs?
It is. They had, so she did this Florex routine in competition. It's so fucking joyous. They had to resubmit her first tumbling pass, this ridiculously hard combination, because it wasn't in the code of points. They didn't know how to score it because it was so new and so complicated and so hard, and nobody else in the world is doing it. So they had to like go back and be like, how do we score it? P.S. spoiler, she gets perfect 10. Her work, so it defies standard scoring. This is a gymnast who a few years earlier had been struggling with body shaming, coming, P.S., from the internet.
Oh,
thanks, internet.
Fuck off.
Body shaming, eating disorders, and a joylessness that made her say, I don't want to be great anymore because what comes with greatness is all that horseshit.
Bullshit.
But this great coach, Miss Val, was like, let's unpack that. Mm-hmm. Let's figure out how you can have all of, you can be great and you can be happy and complete and whole.
I want Miss Val on this show.
No shit. No shit.
I want to get to the bottom of that.
Miss Val, and she's so Miss Val is getting ready to retire. She's been doing it for like 40 plus years, and she had cancer. And she's like, I don't know what my expiration date's going to be. And I think her team, though, will be in very good hands when she finally does retire. But she was like, there's a lot of things in the works. And one of the things she said was a Broadway show. Spark Fall, Miss Val, get on this podcast.
Oh, that's excellent. Wait, that was on her wish list or things that are already happening?
I think like potential projects.
Oh, hello.
So to see somebody like Caitlin Ohashi under the direction of Miss Val, seeing Caitlin rise up, coming from that dark place and seeing her rise up and doing that work that is so advanced and so joyful. And on top of it, she's a poet. Mm-hmm. And she's so self-expressed in her poetry about like how... goodbye to this bull crap. Those are my words, not hers. Mm-hmm. Like I'm standing on these feet now. Again, my words, not hers. These athletes are becoming artists and activists. They are creatively fighting so hard for the powers of good, for That's themselves, right. for their culture, and for the world. I don't wish this kind of pain and adversity on anyone, but there's a saying that I love that goes, if your heart is broken, make art from the pieces. And I feel like these hearts they are creating greatness from the pieces. Martha Beck, who's also very sparkish, said, whatever your hell and back is, that's your gift. These girls have been to hell and back and they are using these gifts for such good. And again, I don't wish this pain and adversity on anyone, but no rain, no flowers. No spider bite.
No spider powers.
Dark spark.
Dark spark.
Hashtag dark spark.
But so good.
Sorry, that was a lot.
And
I know that
so
was
so empowering. It was intense.
I feel sad, happy.
I can't wait to, you know, we'll be posting that video because I distinctly remember it. And it is so joyful. Joyful just like doesn't even capture. It's like tip of the iceberg. I remember watching it more than once and watching all the people around the mat.
That's right. The dancing and doing like doing pieces of the choreo with her.
Yes.
And celebrating her.
So joyfully. Like you couldn't watch it without your spirit being lifted, literally.
Yes. And those... those meets, those UCLA meets, they sell out Poly Pavilion. I mean, there is such love for these athletes. And I share that. I have no claim to you beautiful people. And I'm so proud of you.
It is theater, though. I'm proud of them, too. I didn't mean to cut that off. But that is... theatrical, like when you were talking about the people in the stands there, I mean, it goes back to the Olympic Games, right? Yeah. The theatricality of their performances, that's legit.
Yeah.
Like that's bigger than just an athlete.
Filled, there's something about like the technical ability to do that is remarkable. It's a life's work. When you have all of that technical, that physical precision, that mind, the mental grit that it takes to really work at the top of your game when the stakes couldn't be higher. And then you pump that full of joy. It full of joy and you see it just like moving through her in that performance. It is, it's inspiring. It inspires me.
I can't wait to share that out because we're going to be sharing that.
And I'm inspired to be, I'll tell you this. I mean, there have been times in my life when I have, you know, come forward and talked about things that have happened to me. And I know how much bravery is, that word is thrown around so much, but it requires enormous amounts of bravery. Much. It is so fraught. And I'm just so proud of them because they really went up against an entire culture. They stood up against a big wave, big wave coming at them, and they prevailed.
They prevailed.
So proud of them.
I was just thinking about like small examples in my life as well. Like not nearly what they went through, but calling someone out, you know,
scary,
and saying here's what went down, and I'm not okay with it, and being told you should be kind of embarrassed telling people that.
Yeah.
I'm like, why should I be embarrassed? The bad behavior was not on my part. Yeah. And this is a fraction. I'm like a tiny, tiny sliver of what they went through. Like what people will say to you in order to shut you up.
Yes.
There's really no limit to what people will say.
The way they tried to shut these girls up and shut them down.
Unbelievable.
It kills me that women did it too. Like shut them down.
That's what I just don't like. When you said that earlier, I didn't want to interrupt you, but I was like, do you think those women knew 100% what was going on, or did they, you know, close their eyes and want to believe the best?
I don't know. I didn't like, this was so big and I just was trying to stay on track. So I didn't. One of the questions I had when I was talking to my friend Michael about this, because he is so knowledgeable about this. There's certain sports he loves, and he was a gymnast and loves gymnastics.
He needs to work on that Broadway show. I'll just put a little plug in, because there would be no one better than Michael Barras.
If Miss Val, Valerie Condis Field, choreographs a Broadway show, does a Broadway show, Mike Barras needs to work on that.
Yeah, he does.
Oh my God, that's such a good spark.
We're going to make that happen. We're going to will that to happen.
What was I saying? I don't know what I was saying. But, so I didn't, one of the questions I have for Michael was, what's happened to some of these people that kind of aided and abetted? And I don't know that he knew. And P.S., some of these, like at USA Gymnastics and at University of Michigan, all the chips have not fallen yet.
Wow.
There's still investigations going on. And
good.
And my hope
good.
Is because I don't think that these institutions have, I'll just put it this way. I don't think that they have always prioritized the well-being of these young people.
That's right.
I think there was a lot of cover your ass behavior and a lot of like sweeping under the rug behavior. But I hope that all of the truth will come out
I hope so too.
For justice, but also to protect future
That's
people.
Right. The next generation.
All these people.
Ooh, that was a tough ride to go on, Susan. I'm glad we went on it, though.
Are you okay?
It feels good to, yeah.
Did that make you feel feelings?
I felt a lot of feelings.
Yeah, me too.
But ultimately, it's very
uplifting.
You
know what I say, though, when I say this, and I mean it, and I live it? It's not for everybody. It's not for everybody to want to look at these things closely, or even further make things out of them.
That's right.
But if you are so inclined, if you are an artist who is so inclined to be sparked by such things, there's so much to be made out of it in terms of, it could be an act of social justice. It could be an act of any art form. Absolutely. But also I say to myself and to my students a lot, it's tolerable. I can feel these feelings, these strong, sometimes challenging feelings, and I can hang in there. It's tolerable.
That's right.
We're strong conduits.
That's
again,
right.
It doesn't mean you have to choose to. It's not for everyone, and you know yourself and should do what's right for you.
That's right. Of course.
But I don't think these athletes are the only ones who are strong. I think we're strong too. We're strong conduits for all sorts of self-expression to move through us.
Agreed.
Like this podcast. Is that it for this episode of The Spirit Cameo?
I feel quite satisfied.
Take a deep breath, everybody. I hope that this put another bunch of sparks in your file. Listen, if there is a spark that you'd like us to explore, or you have a spark you'd like to share, or if you've heard some of these sparks and you're making something out of them,
email us.
We do want to know. Email us at the spark file, only to celebrate you. We just want to celebrate you.
That's right.
Email us at thesparkfile@gmail.com and be sure to subscribe to The Shenanigan wherever you get your podcasts. As the kids say, subscribe, rate, and review. Is that how kids talk now?
I don't know, Grandma.
Rate and review.
Listen up. If something does tickle your fancy and it gets your creative juices flowing, it's your turn now to take a spark and fan it into a flame.
You got to ride it. You got to recite it. You got to knit it. You got to go on and get it. You got to take it
and make it.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my spark file. Could be something that I want to make or how I want to be. I pump it in my spark file. I jump into my spark file. Let's open up the spark file.
The National Sexual Assault Hotline is available 24/7. Their telephone is 800-656-HOPE. That's 800-656-4673. You can chat with them online at online.rainn.org. In Espanol, that's rainn.org/ES. If you or someone you know needs support, contact them.